Iranian President Hassan Rouhani has denied his country was behind the recent attacks on Saudi Arabia's oil facilities, demanding the U.S. and France and Germany and the U.K. produce the evidence that would justify their accusation. The proof the European leaders provided was that they think the attacks were beyond the capabilities of the Yemenis. But ground facts point to a new reality. The Saudi-led war on Yemen that began in March 2015 was supposed to last only a few weeks and not even months. But it's been raging on for over 4.5 years. 12 countries from the Middle East and Africa, plus the U.S., Britain, and France, took part in the war on the Arab world's poorest country. Even mercenaries from the U.S. company Academy, formerly known as Blackwater, joined the coalition, but they failed to defeat Yemenis. In this edition of The Debate, we'll discuss the accusation against Iran's role in attacks on Saudi Arabia. But before that, let's watch a background report.
Iran's President Hassan Rouhani is back in Tehran after his trip to New York to attend the 74th session of the UN General Assembly and meet with the world leaders. The visit was particularly significant this year, not only on account of the media speculation about potential Iran-US talks, but because of the grave accusations against Iran following the recent attacks on Saudi Arabia. On September 14, the Yemeni army and Ansarullah movement deployed as many as 10 drones to bomb Abqaiq and Khurais oil facilities run by the Saudi state-owned oil company Aramco. The unprecedented attacks knocked out more than half of Saudi crude output, or 5% of global oil supply. The Yemenis claimed responsibility for the attacks, but that didn't stop the U.S. from immediately pointing the finger at Iran. Later, in a joint statement, French President Emmanuel Macron, German Chancellor Angela Merkel, and British Prime Minister Boris Johnson joined the U.S. and Saudi Arabia in blaming Iran. The kingdom went as far as threatening a military response.
We want to mobilize international support, and we want to look at all of our options, diplomatic options, economic options, and military options, and then make a decision and move in a very deliberate and a very effective manner.
Their rationale and grounds for the accusations were simply the alleged direction of the attacks, which they said came from the north or the west, and their sophistication, which they said was beyond the capability of the Yemenis. Yemen is located in the south of Saudi Arabia. Iran has roundly rejected the allegation against itself. In his press conference after landing in Tehran, Rouhani questioned how the Europeans would go from dismissing the Yemenis' claiming of the attacks to holding Iran accountable merely because there's no other plausible explanation. Rouhani said the Europeans have lots of information on Yemen's enemies, as they provide them with weapons, but they have no knowledge about the Yemenis' capabilities. He also had some warning for those who easily throw around accusations.
When you are leveling an accusation against someone, do you have any idea what this means? It means turmoil. It means fueling sedition and fanning the flames in the region. They had no answer, and I told them all that when I arrive in Tehran, I will be awaiting your evidence.
Just days earlier, Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif said in an interview that the West is underestimating the military might of the Yemenis to fight back the Saudi war. When the Saudis launched the invasion on their southern neighbor, they assumed the war would be won in just a few weeks. That was over 4.5 years ago. And now, with the Saudis bogging down in Yemen after such a long time, calls are rapidly growing for a diplomatic solution to end the devastating war. A solution which Iran has been calling for a long time, but fell on deaf ears in Saudi Arabia and their Western supporters.
Joining us on tonight's debate, we have founder of American Institute for Foreign Policy, Michael Lane, joining us from Washington. Also joining us from Washington, we have former U.S. diplomat in Saudi Arabia, Michael Springman. Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Let's start off with Mr. Lane. Iran's President Hassan Rouhani says that the Europeans have failed to provide proof for their claims that Tehran was involved in the recent attacks on the Saudi oil facilities. If there's no proof, then where are these allegations coming from?
Well, I'll take President Rouhani at his word that he has not seen any proof provided by the Europeans, but I'm not sure that that's actually the point. The Europeans have reached their conclusions, or at least their decisions, based on the circumstances that we're in today. They have concluded that either because it happened or for whatever reason, it's in their interest to pursue policies based on the fact that Iran was the one that caused these attacks to happen. And proof is really not part of that equation. I think that as we move forward, you'll see the Europeans becoming less accommodating with Iran, particularly if these kinds of attacks continue, which I would expect they would. And so we wind up in a situation where the Europeans are essentially backed into a corner where, rather than working with Iran in terms of maintaining the JCPOA, they find themselves in a situation where they reluctantly have to agree with President Trump and become closer to America. And I don't think that's in Iran's interest.
Michael Springman, President Rouhani says Europeans who had blamed Iran for the recent attacks have told him that they did not know who was really behind the attack. What's your response to that?
Well, that's entirely correct. I saw this written up in a news release just a few minutes ago, and it's perfectly correct and perfectly true, I think. The Europeans don't know, but they follow the lead of the United States because the Europeans are weak on political independence and security independence. They are far too tied to the United States. They are far too tied to Israel. Germany, for example, is a great supporter of Israel and really will not act out of line of Israeli interests, which is to destroy Iran, and will not act out of line with American interests, which is basically to supposedly guarantee European independence and security. And they've done a lousy job of it so far in Saudi Arabia. So I think this business of the Europeans blaming Iran for the Yemeni attacks on their Saudi oil field refinery system is very much similar to the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. They say they support it, but they actually do nothing about it except talk.
Michael Lane, do you agree with that assessment? Are the Europeans just following the U.S.'s lead?
Reluctantly, I think they are following the U.S.'s lead at this point. Now, there may be some evidence, some proof, if you will, that U.S. intelligence has provided to the Europeans to look at and review things such as the debris field from the explosions, other things like that. There may even be some trace electronic tapes that would indicate that the drones that attacked were traveling in a southerly direction rather than a northerly direction. I don't know whether that's true or not, but there's enough evidence that the United States probably provided to Europe for them to conclude that. Additionally, although they've been trying to undermine President Trump's decision to pull out of the JCPOA and to reach accord with Iran in terms of meeting the obligations, the economic obligations under that agreement, they've been spectacularly unsuccessful. Whether they've been unsuccessful because they're just dragging their feet and don't really want to, or because the United States economy is so big and so strong that even the Europeans can't find a way to get around the sanctions, I'll leave that to others to comment on. But the simple fact of the matter is President Trump started this a little bit over a year ago, and it looks like he's getting the United States allies to come along with him at this particular time.
Michael Springman, the Iranian president said Europeans apparently have a lot of information on Yemen's enemies as they provide them with weapons, but have no knowledge about the Yemenis' capabilities and realities on the ground. Do you agree with that assessment when the president also stated that the reasoning that the European leaders have been giving that Iran is behind the attack is that the Yemenis don't actually have the capability to carry out such a raid?
Well, I entirely agree with President Rouhani's statement, and I think that the fact that he says the Europeans and the Americans don't have any grasp of the Yemenis' capacity is entirely true. I think that the Americans and the Europeans denigrate the Yemenis. They're always talking about equality and going on about never denigrating a nation or a state or a race or a religion or a linguistic group, but they're sure doing it with Yemen. They think they're too stupid to fight back, yet somehow they've been fighting for 4.5 years. They think they're too stupid to deal with modern weapons, yet they were the ones who modified the Scuds that were left over from the previous pro-Saudi government and used American parts and others to renovate and refurbish these missiles and fire them at the Saudis. So I think with a little bit of training, with a little bit of education, with a little bit of effort, they were able to come up with drone attacks. And you don't necessarily have to fly them all the way from Yemen to Opcake. You can do what the Israelis did and fly them from the sea, from the Persian Gulf. Or you could have the disgruntled Shia in the eastern province of Saudi Arabia, where they've been oppressed for decades, if not longer, and get help from there. Or you can get help from the people in Qatar, who had been the target of Saudi blockades for the past few years. And at one point, Mohammed bin Salman was going to turn Qatar into an island by digging a ditch around the landward side of it. So who knows where the weapons came from? They've just shown that the Saudis and the American defenses and the multi-billion dollar 21st century weapons that have been sold to them are useless if a group of disgruntled, poor, starving Yemenis can get around them and then strike at the heart of the Saudi economy.
Michael Lane, when these countries talk about the lack of sophistication of the Yemenis, are they underestimating their capabilities, in your opinion? The Yemeni forces, as we know, have carried out retaliatory attacks in the past, and this war has been extended far beyond what the Saudis and the 14 other contributing countries had fathomed.
Well, it's very true that the conflict has gone on well beyond what the coalition forces had fathomed. I suspect that a lot of that, in my opinion, is due to the fact that they're trying to fight almost an entire war from the air. The amount of ground forces that have been committed to the effort and the quality of those ground forces is suspect. If you really want to win a war, you have to be on the ground. You can't just do it all from the air. But as far as the question as to whether or not the Houthi rebels are sophisticated enough, smart enough, whatever it is. Look, they have not developed these weapons. They acquired these weapons from someplace else. The United States says they acquired the weapons they get from Iran. If the Houthis were responsible for the drone attack, there would be no need for them to do the circumvention and fly them all the way around to come in for the north, since an hour after the attack happened, the Houthis claimed credit for it. The reason you would have them come in from a different direction would be to sort of fake as to, like, we weren't the ones who did it, but the Houthis are claiming credit. Finally, let me say that, you know, it's a matter of access to these kinds of weapons, and it's a matter of training. It's not a matter of intelligence. And United States intelligence at this point appears to say that the Houthis did not have custody of these kinds of weapons and furthermore didn't have the training to pull the attack off.
Michael Springman, would you like to respond to that?
Well, yes, I would. I have very little regard for American intelligence capabilities. I was at the CIA's consulate in Jeddah and got to see the clandestine service officers operating close up. And they hadn't a clue, for example, that the Chinese were selling and installing their silkworm missiles, an intermediate-range ballistic missile, in Saudi Arabia until my contacts told me about it. Then I told the American government. When I was at the consulate in Stuttgart with two successive consuls generals who worked for the intelligence services, these people really hadn't a clue as to what was going on in Germany and stuck with the old guard, the people who were of retirement age, and didn't want to cultivate anybody under the age of 50, the successor generation, to ensure that the American government would have good contacts in the future. They are simply totally out of touch with reality. And for example, if you want a glaring example, look at September 11, 2001. The American intelligence services, the National Security Agency, and the Central Intelligence Agency primarily, supposedly had no clue that this was going to happen, and were taken aback and were, I guess, as our British friends say, on the wrong foot on this thing. So I don't believe anything the American intelligence services say, even if the sun rises in the east.
Michael Lane, is this all a parallel to the U.S. agenda of piling pressure on Iran?
I believe it is, to a certain extent. Now, the assessment that Iran may have been behind the attack is part and parcel of the maximum pressure. I don't think It's a standalone thing by itself. It's part of the entire array of pressure that the United States is putting on the economy of Iran. You know, we had the possibility for a meeting between the two countries on the sidelines at the United Nations this past week. That did not occur. We'll see in the future whether or not the current diplomatic back and forth with, well, we didn't want to meet because of this, or they didn't want to meet because of this, since they're talking about why they didn't want to meet, maybe we'll find out in the future that there will be some sort of meeting, and we'll be step one on the way to diplomacy.
Michael Springman, were these attacks, in your opinion, a perfect pretext to pump more arms and broaden an American presence in Saudi Arabia? Riyadh seems to be gobbling all that up because the U.S. is sending one Patriot missile defense battery and four ground-based Sentinel radars to Saudi Arabia to bolster the kingdom's defense at this point.
Well, I think the Americans are using this as an attempt to gain more influence in the region, especially in Saudi Arabia, its client state, by sending token Patriot missile batteries, which have a remarkably bad track record, as we saw in various past Gulf Wars, and sending in more American technicians to Saudi Arabia, you know, the very religious, very ultra-Orthodox Wahhabi country, took umbrage at the Americans, the unbelievers, taking up positions in the country during the 2003 Gulf War, and this brought about rage from Osama bin Laden and others. So I think the Americans, in trying to cultivate the Saudis and placate them for their buying their useless weapon systems, are simply trying to make the best of a bad deal, and they hope, I guess, in the future, that they will continue to be the apple in the Saudis' eyes, and the Saudis will come to them for more and more assistance, which probably will work to their detriment.
Michael, your thoughts? Your thoughts on the same issue? Is the United States at this point jumping at the opportunity to broaden its presence in the region?
Look, the United States is an ally of Saudi Arabia. We have agreements where we help mutual help with Saudi Arabia's security. So when Saudi's security is threatened, as it has been through these attacks, it's not unthinkable or even strange that the United States would offer to come in and do what they can to enhance the security of Saudi Arabia. Certainly, I think most Saudis would hope that an attack like this would not happen again. So President Trump has authorized deployment of defensive missiles and troops to go to Saudi to assist in their thing. I think there is a really, really big question. The one we haven't asked yet is how in the heck, with all the money that Saudi has sunk into security over the last years and all the weapons systems, including defensive weapon systems that they have purchased from the United States, how was this attack successful? Now, there have been various theories, including that, you know, Saudi was looking the wrong way. They never expected the attack to come from the direction it did. But that's no excuse. You know, you defend yourselves in a 360 perimeter. When you're exposed 360 degrees, you don't just defend yourself going in the direction from which you think an attack might come.
Michael Springman, my last question to you. Shouldn't there be more focus on the blood being spilled in Yemen rather than the oil that was spilled in Saudi Arabia? Schools and hospitals are being deliberately demolished. Women and children are dying by the hour in Yemen. Is oil more precious than blood for some of these Western countries?
Well, to the Americans and the Europeans, yes, blood is not as important as oil, and free access to oil, the ability to sell weapons to the Saudis and other repressive states. But I think we should focus on what's happening in Yemen. The half the country is on the edge of starvation. There is vast amounts of sickness across the country, not least of which is cholera. The Saudis have attacked school buses. They bombed wedding processions. They've attacked schools. They are absolutely savage people, and they've been denounced by former American ambassador to Saudi Arabia as committing war crimes in Yemen, but somehow nobody wants to focus on this.
And Michael Lane, your thoughts on that, on the final question. Is oil more precious than blood for some of these Western countries?
Yeah, well, okay, so I agree with Mr. Springman that the targeting or target selection that Saudi Arabia has used in this particular aerial combat has been really disappointing. There have been too many incidents to be able to call it an accident or a casualty of war or something like that. It becomes apparent that upon occasion they select targets that are wholly and completely inappropriate. That said, Yemen has the misfortune of being just in the wrong corner of the world. The amount of public pressure and the amount of publicity that might be brought to restrain some of these excesses simply doesn't happen because it's just off the radar screen in terms of world media and the press and reporting. The average American doesn't even know that we're quasi involved in helping Saudi Arabia in the Yemen theater. And even though the United States Senate took action to do so, it was a one-day story in the United States. If you missed it that day, you missed it, and if you only heard it once, it probably went in and out. There would be the Yemen cause would benefit greatly from additional public relations, additional press coverage, but I don't see it happening because it's just in the wrong place.
All right, thanks a lot. We're fresh out of time. Allow me to thank my guest, founder of American Institute for Foreign Policy, Michael Ayan, joining us from Washington, D.C., and former U.S. diplomat in Saudi Arabia, Michael Springman, also joining us from Washington, D.C., and thanks to you, our viewers, for watching tonight's debate. Goodbye for now, everybody.